Good morning, welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the 20th perek of Malachim Aleph. This perek is a long perek and it describes the battles that Ahav has with his neighbor in the north, Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram. Okay, so now we start right at the perek, and the first thing that happens is Ben-Hadad, remember, he has been appointed by Eliyahu as the king of Aram. He has great nationalistic and expansive views of territory, and he turns to Ahab and he gathers 32 kings and says to Ahab, entering into battle, please give me all your kesef and zahav, all your gold, silver and gold, and all your good wives and children are mine. And Ahab responds very submissively, Kidvarcho Adoni HaMelech. You just said, everything that is mine is yours. So in response, Ahab says, well, tomorrow I'm going to send messengers. Please give them everything I demand. And when this happens, when this happens, Ahab then realizes that he really means business. And he turns to the Zakenim, to the elders and the people, and they say to him, don't do this. Don't listen to her, Ben-Hadad. These terms are too far. He's gone too far. And so he responds, and he says, Kol asher shalachta lavdecha, what you asked for first I will do, but not what you asked for second. What is the difference between what he asked for first and second? So the Radak points out, at the beginning, Ahab thought this was a taxation issue. Meaning, he thought what Ben-Hadad was essentially saying was, you have to pay taxes because of all the good you have. And he says, okay, I'll pay taxes. But when he actually demanded it to be taken, all the gold and silver, his wives and children, he said, that's too far. I don't mean to actually give them to you. This seems to be what's happening over here. There is an interesting drush, which the Radak points out, which it sounds like that maybe what he was asking for was not just the physical wealth, but the Torah, but the wisdom as well, and he was not willing to do that, which is a great schus for Ahav. What that means was Ahav really following the Torah? Not clear. That seems to be why it was that he turned to the Zakenim, to the elders, because he did not have that asset himself. Worthwhile thinking what that really means, what was Ben-Hadad truly asking for. Okay, so Ben-Hadad did not appreciate that response, so he turns to him and he, very angrily says, "In Yishboik, Avar Shomron Lishalim Lekola Amashe Baragli." You know what? Ha ha ha! I've got an army which is so big that there's not enough sand in the whole of Shomron that to fill the palms of every soldier's hand. Meaning, just that's how many soldiers I have. And in response, Ahav responds by saying, "Al Yisrael El Chol Ger K'mavteach," which is a very interesting phrase. Which means the person who is unsheathing their sword for battle should not rejoice like the person who is resheathing it. A person who resheathes it means to say they're coming back from battle, meaning to say, don't count your eggs before they're hatched, essentially. This is an interesting phrase we could definitely apply it in love. Don't rejoice unsheathing, rejoice only when you resheathe. That's the saying that Ahav says. Okay, so going to battle, and in the meantime, Ben-Hadad takes siege on a city called Sukkos, and he and his men go and get drunk there. So in the meantime, a Navi, whose name is Michayahu, comes to Ahav, and he says to him, I'm going to give you this battle. You're going to succeed in this battle in the name of Hashem. It's going to be a great Kiddush Hashem in order to prove Hashem's presence. Okay, and this is what happens. So Ahav sends out his messengers, he's to spy out. In the meantime, what happens is Ben-Hadad sees these messengers coming, and he says, whether they're coming for war or peace, capture them alive, and that's what he tries to do. However, what happens is that they fail terribly. Israel beats them, destroys an incredible amount of soldiers on their side. And chases them, destroys their military, destroys their chariots, essentially the Navi comes back to Ahav and says, understand that he's going to be back in a year to fight you again. Lech v'hischazek, go and strengthen yourself to prepare yourself for that year. What does that mean? Malbim says physically, get your military together to that should not be another miracle. Whereas the Radak says no. It actually means to say, prepare yourself spiritually, because maybe Hashem did an ace for you now, but he's not going to do it for you next time unless you're ready. Does he do this? Does he not do this? It's not clear in the text. We'll see maybe a few indicators. So that's what exactly happens. A year later, the men of Ben-Hadad say to him, ah, Ben-Hadad, you know why we lost that battle? Because that was a battle fought on the mountains. The God of Israel likes mountains. Therefore, that's why you lost. Another thing, Ben-Hadad, you had 32 kings. Kings don't throw themselves onto the battlefield. Dismiss all your kings and appoint them all officers, because officers will fight in the battle. So it was. Ben-Hadad gathers an enormous army, and he comes together to fight Israel. And so it is. He brings a huge battlefront together, and Bnei Yisrael come together. It sounds like they chasife ge'izim. They're like these two little groups of goat gatherers, of goat herds, compared to the huge land which is filled with Ben-Hadad's army. Okay, they go into battle, and the Malach Hashem comes again and says, because he denied Hashem's power in the valleys, and he said Hashem was only powerful in the mountains, that's why you're going to win this battle. Meaning, not on your own right do you win this battle. It's ready to make a Kiddush Hashem, or to prevent the Chilul Hashem of Ben-Hadad's claim, or his officer's claim. Okay, so he goes into battle, and Israel beat them incredibly. We talk about the numbers. They destroyed 100,000 infantry in one day. And then they chased him, and they captured another 27,000. I mean, we talk about huge numbers that are captured and killed in this battle. And as the Radak points out, it's simply because of the Kiddush Hashem, not because of his own merit necessarily. Okay, so in the meantime, now at this point, Ben-Hadad is in a very precarious situation. He's being surrounded. He is a refugee. He stands to be captured. So his servant said to him, "Ah, you know what? This nation of Israel is a nation which has a lot of rachmanos. You know what you should do? Is put yourself into sackcloth and go and appeal to their mercy, because if you fight, they'll kill you." So that's what he does. He goes and he dresses up in sackcloth, and he goes over and he says, "I'm Ben-Hadad." At first, they don't believe him, and then they were Menachesh. They sort of looked into it more on a more metaphysical level, which perhaps they should not have, and they realize that it is Ben-Hadad. And so Achav, seeing Ben-Hadad, pulls him up onto his chariot, and he says to him, he says, "Return all the cities that you took from me and from my father, and let's make a bris, or make a covenant," and he sends him off in peace. The Malbim points out that this was a mistake. You should never have mercy on cruel people, because ultimately they come back to bite you. And that's what exactly is going to happen in the next two parakim. In the meantime, what happens is there's a very curious case at the end of this parak of the student prophets. So one of the Bnei Nevi'im, who's a student prophet, turns to his contemporary and says to him, "Hit me." And his fellow did not hit him. So then he says to him, "Because you didn't listen to me to hit me, then you're going to be killed by a lion." And that's what happens. His friend goes out and is eaten by a lion. Interesting. Then he turns to the next friend and he says to him, "Hit me." And the man hits him and hurts him, and he bleeds. That's story number one. Then he goes out and he goes in front of the king and he rolls in the dust and he goes until his eyes, and he goes to the king and he says to him, I was in battle, and I captured a captive, and I said to the captive, "Look, captive, I'll only let you go if you paid money, or if I'll lose my life for letting you go." And the man left, and the man escaped. "What should I do for that slave, the person I captured from Aram?" So the king said, "So you decide your own death, because you said you would give your life if he escaped." So this prophet took away all the dust off himself and said, "I'm a better one of the Nevi'im. That's what you did. You released Ben-Hadad, the king of this people, when you had him in your hand. Nafshoi tachas nafshoi. Your soul will be in the place of his, because you let him go. Amcho tachas amo. Your nation will be in the place of his, because you let them go." And Achav returns home very upset. What's going on over here? There seems to be two messages. The Radak points out message number one is that when you don't hit, when you're commanded by God to hit, you're killed. That's what he seems to be doing. It's interesting that the audience of this does not seem to be Achav, because Achav's not there right now. And maybe that this is, in a certain sense, crystallizing the decree. In fact, the Chazal point out that the blood that he lost by being hit by the second person was going to be an atonement for Israel. Even though he said, that the nation and the king will lose because of this, the nation won't end up losing. Why? Because of the being hit by and bleeding. So, meaning to say that he's atoning for the nation by this bleeding. The second message, of course,
is that Ahav, because you released him when you had opportunity and God gave you this miracle in your hand to kill the Melech Aram, that's why you're going to suffer in the future. And that is, in fact, what's going to happen. But this leads us into Perek Chof Aleph, which will continue Be'ezos Hashem in future. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.